KSDP, 8:30 a.m. in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in False Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
It's time now for your weather, tide predictions, and sunrise and sunset. Starting with your coastal water forecast, courtesy of the National Weather Service of Anchorage, Alaska. From Sitkanap to Castle Cape, small craft advisory through tonight. Today, southwest winds 30 knots, seas 9 feet. Tonight, southwest winds 25 knots, seas 9 feet. And Tuesday, south winds 15 knots, seas 6 feet. Castle Cape to Cape Tolstoy, small craft advisory through tonight. Today, southwest winds 30 knots, seas 9 feet. Tonight, southwest winds 25 knots, seas 7 feet. And Tuesday, south winds 15 knots, seas 5 feet. Cape Tolstoy to Cape Sarashef, gale warning today. Today, southwest winds 35 knots, seas 16 feet. Tonight, southwest winds 30 knots, seas 12 feet. And Tuesday, southeast winds 20 knots, seas 8 feet with rain. Port Hyde and Nelson Lagoon, small craft advisory tonight. Today, south winds 30 knots, seas 7 feet. Tonight, south winds 25 knots, seas 6 feet. And Tuesday, southeast winds 20 knots, seas 6 feet. Nelson Lagoon to Cape Sarashef, gale warning today. Today, southwest winds 35 knots, seas 9 feet. Tonight, southwest winds 30 knots, seas 9 feet. And Tuesday, south winds 25 knots, seas 7 feet. Your detailed forecast for the Alaska Peninsula. Today, scattered showers. Mostly cloudy with highs near 43. Southwest winds 30 to 35 miles per hour with gusts as high as 45. Tonight, scattered showers. Mostly cloudy with lows around 38. Southwest winds 20 to 25 miles per hour with gusts as high as 35. And Tuesday, rain likely, mainly between 1 and 4 p.m. Cloudy. Highs near 45. Southeast winds 10 to 15 miles an hour. Your tide predictions for the Popoff Island. There was a high tide at 2:19 at 7 feet 2 inches. A low at 9:22, a minus tide of 9 inches. A high at 3:59 p.m. at 5 feet 5 inches. And a low at 8:52 p.m. at 2 feet 8 inches. Your sun rose at 6:37 this morning, and your sun will set at 10:40. Bringing us up to 16 hours and 4 minutes of daylight hours. And that was your weather, tide predictions, and sunrise and sunset here on KSDP and KAEB. I'm Amy Mack. Thanks for listening and have a great day.
Today on KUCB News, a World War II-era military airfield in Cold Bay is now resurfacing pieces of wartime history. And the Alaska Senate passed a budget with a $1,000 PFD. All of that and more coming up.
ALYU is proud to sponsor the stories and voices that connect our community. ALYU is committed to building a stronger future for our region. To learn more about ALYU's commitment for a stronger future, visit alucorp.com.
You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. It's Monday, May 12th, 2025. I'm Sophia Stewart Rossi with some local news. The U.S. military built Fort Randall Army Airfield in Cold Bay during World War II to defend against the looming threat from Japan's Imperial Forces. The base was eventually decommissioned, but as the Alaska Desk's Theo Greenlee reports, a long-forgotten piece of that military past is now resurfacing.
The scenery doesn't immediately change when you drive the gravel road out of Cold Bay on the Alaska Peninsula. The peaks of Pavlov Volcano and Pavlov Sister, some 40 miles away, frame a wide expanse of flat tundra dotted with small lakes. Just about nobody knows the area better than Hap Kramer.
This lake right here is Blen Lake. And if you see right here, see the wooden stake there?
Kramer grew up playing in the abandoned World War II-era Quonset huts and underground structures scattered across the area. He's been living in the community on and off since his family moved here in the 70s. So 2 years ago, when his childhood friend said he found a photograph showing a previously unknown World War II gravesite, he was surprised.
Has a photo of that fence that was up, a white picket fence that sat right there, and then there was people coming up this road that we just drove up. There's a long line of people coming up to bury someone here.
They had stumbled across some of the only records of the Fort Randall Post Cemetery, the burial ground for military personnel during the middle of the war when nobody knew who would win. Out at the site in late April, you can clearly see the weathered wooden stakes following a line about 100 yards long up on a small hill overlooking Blinn Lake.
I just came out here with the picture. He said, yeah, I think it's right in this area. So I came out and scouted around.
He lined up the photograph with the lake in the background.
And sure enough, he was right on the money. And it took me about 3 minutes to find it.
Hap's friend who helped find the site is Michael Livingston. He's a former Cold Bay resident and a military history enthusiast. Livingston had been reviewing old photographs posted by the Alaska Military History Association when one caught his eye.
After the war ended and after they exhumed all the soldiers that were buried there and shipped their remains back to their home states, the cemetery was forgotten about. It didn't show up on any maps. Nobody knew its location. Anybody who knew about it, who lived in Cold Bay back in the 40s, and 50s has since passed away, so it had been completely forgotten about, and nobody knew of its location until just recently.
The Aleutian campaign is sometimes called the Forgotten War. Cold Bay itself didn't host any battles during the war, but it was a crucial base during the 1942 bombing of Dutch Harbor and the invasions of Attu and Kiska the following year. In total, 36 service members, 33 of them American and 3 of them Russian, were buried at the Fort Randall Post Cemetery. All were exhumed after the war. Their remains returned to their families. Well, today, the land where the cemetery once was belongs to the Federal Aviation Administration. Livingston is working with the agency to formally recognize the site.
Even though the remains of the service members have been removed, it's still considered sacred ground, and it would be nice to have it memorialized.
He says it's a way to assure that this part of the forgotten war is always remembered. In Cold Bay, I'm Theo Greenlee.
The Alaska Department of Corrections is the largest provider of health and behavioral health care in the state. Now the ACLU of Alaska is suing Governor Mike Dunleavy and 2 DOC employees for failing to provide adequate health care for people who are incarcerated. As Alaska Public Media's Rachel Cassandra reports, the suit is a culmination of a years-long investigation.
About 4,400 Alaskans are incarcerated in the state, and the Department of Corrections, or DOC, is legally required to provide adequate health care to people who are incarcerated. But Megan Edge with the American Civil Liberties Union, or ACLU, of Alaska says that isn't happening.
It's shocking how many just basic human needs are not being met, medications that are not in on time. We've had undiagnosed illnesses that have caused cancer. We have seen people with all sorts of physical disabilities and illnesses and things going on that DOC is not addressing.
The ACLU's class action lawsuit claims that the Department of Corrections has failed to provide adequate health care for those in its care. It claims that failure, quote, creates a substantial risk of serious harm and endangers the health, safety, and lives of incarcerated people, end quote. The lawsuit claims that the current DOC healthcare system is unconstitutionally denying adequate health, mental health, and dental care to people who are incarcerated. And it asks the state to immediately make changes to their systems to remedy that. The Department of Corrections declined to comment on the lawsuit. But during an interview last fall, DOC Health Director Adam Rutherford said it's an exceptional challenge to provide healthcare for the population.
We reflect the community but it's also a concentration of all those highest problems. You know, folks that struggle with addiction, folks that are diagnosed with mental health, the acuity level, the number of folks with Hep C. So the problems that you see out in the community are concentrated and often magnified here within our system.
According to the lawsuit, one person wasn't given glasses for their severe myopia. Another was allegedly denied care for diabetes and told to simply exercise. A prisoner with post-traumatic stress disorder experiencing night terrors was allegedly denied sleeping medication. The suit also mentions six people who died in DOC custody as a result of what the lawsuit describes as inadequate health care. Kelsey Green is one of the people named in the lawsuit who died under DOC's care. Green's father, John, says she died of dehydration while detoxing from opioids because she was alone.
The night she died, they put her in a segregated cell by herself. Someone was told to get her a cellmate. That never happened. And when they came and checked on her in the morning, she was naked underneath the call button, stuck in a position with her hand up where she couldn't reach the call button.
According to the lawsuit, requesting medical care is an overly complicated process. People who are incarcerated must ask a guard or staff member. The suit says DOC staff discouraged people from formally requesting care, and in several cases distributed a fake form that asked the, quote, whiner if they wanted help from their, quote, mommy for their, quote, sissy feelings. That system is problematic, according to Dr. William Weber. He's a physician and works for the national nonprofit Medical Justice Alliance.
Guards or other prison staff are not medically trained. And really, from a health privacy standpoint, guards generally should not be privy to information about patients' health, just in the same way you wouldn't talk to like a security guard at the hospital about your medical concerns.
And he says one of the fundamental challenges for incarcerated people is that they are entirely dependent on the correction system for their care.
You can't just go to another hospital. You can't just go to another ER. You don't have access to the same healthcare resources. Most patients could look online, or most patients could talk to their physician or talk to their friends.
Edge from the ACLU says that poor healthcare for incarcerated people impacts everyone in Alaska.
We spend a ton of money on our correctional system. About 96% of the population goes home one day, and we're not sending them home in good shape. We're sending them home in worse shape than when we booked them. To me, that is a huge sign that our system is absolutely failing.
Edge says she hopes the lawsuit helps create reforms in the Department of Corrections healthcare system. In Anchorage, I'm Rachel Cassandra.
The Alaska Senate approved its version of the state budget last week. It includes a $1,000 permanent fund dividend and for now a slight surplus. But senators say they expect that surplus to evaporate, and they're warning of tough times in the years ahead, as Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone reports.
It's telling that much of the debate about this year's budget revolves around what's in store for next year.
If by some miracle oil prices jump next year, it's going to be a lot worse next year.
It's clear to me that the decisions next year will be even more difficult than the decisions that we have made today.
You heard there from Republican Senators Rob Myers and Mike Kronk, as well as Senator Lyman Hoffman. He's a Bethel Democrat and the Senate's chief budgeter. Hoffman pointed to stiff headwinds buffeting the state's revenue. The biggest, of course, is oil prices. They're lower than lawmakers expected and not looking like they'll improve in a meaningful way anytime soon. Even expanded drilling likely won't help in the near future, given the way the state's tax code works. Another is federal spending. The federal government is the biggest single source of state revenue, roughly half the state budget.
The state's budget has over $6 billion in federal revenues that help pay for many services, from Medicaid, heating assistance, to fish and game research and K-12 education.
Even a small cut to federal spending would leave the budget reeling, and Congress and President Donald Trump aren't exactly suggesting small cuts. So there was, as there always is, debate over how big the permanent fund dividend should be. $1,000 would be the lowest inflation-adjusted dividend in state history. Even Hoffman says it's too little. But the debate was a little half-hearted. There were the standard attempts to raise the dividend to the $3,800 amount set in state law and to the 50-50 system Governor Mike Dunleavy proposed a few years ago. Senate Minority Leader Mike Schauer, a Wasilla Republican, proposed and quickly withdrew amendments that would raise the dividend. He says he largely did it for the folks watching at home, but he acknowledged that the lean times now and to come made it unrealistic.
This is not forgotten, and we understand it's there. The headwinds of the fiscal situation and other things are changing that dynamic at the moment.
The one dividend amendment that did come to a vote, a shower proposal to boost it to $1,500, failed by a wide margin. With all the dire warnings of lean times again, there was also plenty of debate about how the state should fix its structural budget issues. There were calls from, among others, Democratic Anchorage Senator Bill Wilkowski to expand state revenue.
We are not following our constitutional obligation to get the maximum value for our resources. You want a full PFD? You want a half PFD, a 50-50 PFD? You got to fix oil taxes.
And there were calls from others, including Shower, to return to negotiations on a long-term fiscal plan, including an expansion of taxes and ways to keep government spending in check, like a spending cap.
Part of why we are here is because we haven't enacted enough of that yet to get enough of us to the center to move it off the table by doing it.
There was even a rebuke of the governor's budget proposal, which included a $3,800 dividend that would have drained half of the state's savings, from Wasilla Republican Senator Rob Yutt. He represents a lot of the same constituents that Dunleavy himself once represented during his time in the legislature.
I cannot wrap my mind around walking into my house and dropping a budget on my wife's desk that's $1.5 billion upside down on day one. It shouldn't even be legal.
Hoffman says it was a Herculean task to construct a balanced budget, giving all of the state's headwinds, and he says he's not happy with the budget's cuts to key programs, from child care to corrections.
We all wish we could provide all the services that every Alaskan desires, but that is not reality. The bottom line is our constituents want and deserve more.
At the end of it, though, he says lawmakers had no choice. The budget passed 16-4 with votes from all of the bipartisan majority caucus and two minority Republicans, who said they were glad their voices were heard in the Senate Finance Committee. Now it goes back to the House, which will likely vote to set up a conference committee to craft a final budget. Lawmakers have until midnight on May 21st to take a final vote. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
Let's take a look at KUCB's community calendar this week. Unalaska City Council will hold a special meeting this evening starting at 6 o'clock in the City Hall Council Chambers. The agenda includes five resolutions covering major infrastructure and administrative matters, which are a partnership with Mattson Shipping for crane engineering at the Marine Center, sponsorship of the annual Alaska Harbor Masters Conference, approval of a purchase for armor rock and crane mobilization for dredging projects, ratification of a firefighters union contract through 2026, and authorization for power system upgrades at the powerhouse. For more information about this evening's City Council special meeting, contact City Clerk's office or head to our community calendar at kucb.org. Tomorrow evening, Unalaska City Council will hold their regular meeting at 6 o'clock in the City Hall Council Chambers. This meeting includes a work session with presentations on the FY24 audit plan and utility rate study, followed by a regular agenda featuring resolutions on property tax rates, community support grants, a community schools agreement, the FY26-FY35 capital plan, an acknowledgement of the McCutcheon geothermal project being closed out of the capital budget. The council will also hold a closed executive session to discuss negotiations with the IUOE Local 302. For more information on tomorrow's City Council's regular meeting, contact the City Clerk's office or head to our community calendar at kucb.org. Both meetings will be live streamed on 89.7 FM, KUCB, and Channel 8 TV. The community open mic has been rescheduled to this Friday evening from 7 o'clock to 9 at Burma Road Chapel. Performers of all experience levels are invited to share their talent in a supportive environment, while guests enjoy coffee and light refreshments, all ages welcome. For more information on this week's community events, head to our community calendar at kucb.org. That's the news from Unalaska. I'm Sophia Stewart-Rossi, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org, and please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts.
It's time now for your community window here on KSDP. Starting with job openings, the QT Tribe of Sandpoint is looking for a grant writer, an executive director, an environmental assistant, and an administrative assistant. The Shipping Corporation is hiring a bartender. The Palof Harbor Tribe is hiring a tribal environmental coordinator. The city of Sandpoint is hiring a part-time pull-tab sales assistant. The King Cove Department of Public and Safety is looking for a certified police officer. Interested applicants can contact the King Cove PD at 907-497-2210. Each is hiring a behavioral health trainee and a community health representative. Both of those positions can be in Sandpoint or King Cove. They're also hiring a clinical information clerk for King Cove, a community health aide for False Pass and Nelson Lagoon, and a clinical information clerk slash janitor for Cold Bay. Community announcements. King Cove, the city office will be closed today due to a water leak, and the King Cove PD will be using a burn barrel. And today is May 12, 2025. Happy birthday to Jacqueline Dela Cruz, and happy birthday to Dane Wilson. And that's all for the community window. If you have anything you'd like for us to put on the air or web, you can contact us through email at cw@apradio.org. You can call us at 907-383-5737, or you can still fax us at 907-383-5271. Also, look for updates, meeting archives, and more at apradio.org. I'm Amy Mack. Thanks for listening and have a great day.
KSDP is generously supported by Precision Airways in Sandpoint, Alaska, offering chartered air services throughout the Aleutians East Borough and beyond. For more information on charters and prices, Theo is available at 907-989-4080. Precision Airways is a proud sponsor of KSDP.
Ziggy played guitar, jamming good with Webb and Gilly and the Spiders from Mars. He played it left hand, but made it too far. Became the special man, then we were Ziggy's band. Ziggy really sang, screwed up eyes and screwed down hairdo, like some cat from Japan. He could lick 'em by smiling, he could leave 'em to hang. They came on so loaded, man, well hung in snow white tan. Time, jiving us that we were voodoo. The kids were just crass. He was the Nats with God-given ass. He took it all too far, but boy, could he play guitar. Making love with his ego, Ziggy sucked up in his mind, like a leper messiah. When the kids had killed a man, I had to break up the band.
Thank you. Thank you.
Give me my release.
KSDP Radio, 8:30 a.m. Sandpoint, 88.1 FM on translator K201DA, King Cove, Alaska. See, we're all the same.
Forgetting to give back.